Still broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, this is the QR Code, where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. The man you are about to hear from is a man who, in my estimation, glows in the dark and walks on water. He is the Q in the QR Code. He goes by the name of Q Ward.
The voice that you just heard, embellishing would be putting it too lately. Sometimes Rams just be lying to y'all. Because I can't do none of the stuff he just said. But again, that's my brother and I love him. He is the R in the QR code. He goes by the name Rams. It's Job.
I love you too, dog. All right, stick around. A little later on in the show, we are going to be having a conversation for our entertainment segment. Tyler Reddick discusses Jordan's interaction with his son. Tyler Reddick is the NASCAR driver that won the race, for those who didn't hear the show yesterday. We're going to have some dialogue. How many years older or younger should you date slash marry? That seemed topical, so we're going to talk about it. But right now, Q Ward's clapback, blow the whistle. Q?
So here we are, man. These clips have been like really soul nourishing for me during this Black History Month and just during this time in the country. You know, Black History Month has a greater significance, the 100th Black History Month, at a time where, wow, do we need some reassurance of our worth, our value, and our need to continue to persevere. Again, we're playing clips from a different time in history, so there's some political language and historical references that may not feel comfortable, that may feel confronting, but that is kind of the point. So this is James Baldwin in 1963 at the Community Church of New York. He is on a panel about the so-called Negro Revolution and white backlash. That should sound very familiar. This room is mostly white liberals, people who believe they're on the right side of history. Baldwin is not there to reassure them. He tells them it's time to blow the whistle. He says it's beneath him to deny being called a communist. And then very quietly, he says he doesn't want to see any more blood. When he says it, the room goes still. Listen closely.
Now, I think it is time to blow the whistle. I think it is time to begin to deal with the power structure. We're not dealing with white people. It's not a matter of what white people think about you or what, even what they think about themselves. What one has to do is examine and overhaul the system which creates this and perpetuates it. It is a very important parenthesis, I think, that I probably ought to make. One's got to point out, I think, that in this country, since the McCarthy era, and is one of the reasons for our absolutely, absolutely spectacular impotence, anyone who mentioned the word economics was promptly given a ticket to Moscow. I think it is beneath me to say that I am not a communist. I think it's beneath the nation, and very dangerous for the nation, to raise this peculiar red herring the moment one begins to deal with things as they are. Now, speaking for myself, and trying as best I can to discharge what I take to be my responsibility to everyone in the streets, including me, I don't want to see any more blood. Nobody's blood. My God. No, if we could end the nightmare tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, I could die, you know, in peace. But in fact, the nightmare will not be ended tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. This is why it is so important now to be precise about what it is that we must do. It is impossible. All my liberal friends and critics to the contrary, it is absolutely impossible for any Negro in this country to be fitted into the structure as it now exists. That is not a possibility. One must be willing to take upon oneself the responsibility of examining and changing the structure so that it becomes more human for everybody.
You can feel like you're in that room when you listen to that. Baldwin doesn't threaten anyone. He isn't posturing. He isn't asking permission. He's talking to a room of people that believe they are good. And he's telling those people that goodness without courage is meaningless. When Baldwin says it's time to blow the whistle, he's talking about complicity, about pretending neutrality while violence continues, about choosing comfort over confrontation. And when he says he doesn't want to see any more blood, he's not being abstract. He's warning them. Change will happen. The only question is whether it happens with honesty or with bodies. That's why in that moment, the room goes from applause to silence. Because people are confronted with the reconciliation that they're being asked to decide who they are before history decides it for them. Ramses, you and I are at a moment now. We have, you know, off the microphone, uncomfortable conversations about the temperature of this country. There's a thing called martyrdom that once upon a time may have had a great impact. But what does it mean if you die for your people or your country, if the people that killed you get to call you a terrorist and take all the meaning from your sacrifice, put it in a blender and throw it in the trash? It is for those who would call themselves allies, for those who see themselves as decent, to stand up for those who are not being allowed to stand up for themselves. Allyship, as we are noting very loudly in proper propaganda, is no longer enough. We need co-conspirators. We need compatriots. We need teammates standing next to us, fighting with us, and in some cases, fighting for us.
Man, you're right. These excerpts take us back. But they also remind us that we're still connected to that time. And people say it all the time, but I think it's more and more meaningful as I learn more and more about what we've gone through, is that this country has never come to terms with its original sin, has never made that right, has never fully dealt with it, has never apologized for it. And as a result, we don't move forward to the America that we could be. It's really a sad thing. So, all right, let's switch gears. Very topical. How many years older or younger should you date slash marry? You know, I look to you for advice like this, man. You wanna go first?
Calling it advice would suggest to the audience that I'm some expert who could give such a thing. And in most cases, I think I'm greatly underqualified to give anybody advice.
Sure, yeah, I go with that.
Dating and love or whatever it's called. I'm a divorced man who, as you can imagine, has been with more than one person, which means a lot of failed relationships before now. And I don't think anybody's giving me the spouse, partner, lover, romantic teammate of the year award anytime soon. So advice, I think, should come from someone presumed to be an expert, at least. I wouldn't even present myself that way with regard to this. When it comes to relationships, I think I have a lot of insight.
Okay.
Because I've been in a lot of them. I've fallen head over heels in love more than once, allowed myself to, and felt the pain and the failure and the crushing heartbreak each and every time. this question at this time in history rings all of the alarms.
Yeah.
Right? How young?
Yeah, right.
To date, which would have a person's mind go immediately to romance, intimacy, and all of those things. I always say with regard to people who end up in spaces with people who are dangerously younger than them, some of our reactions are limbic. They are part of animal nature. You see something that you're attracted to, you react to it, right? So I can see how somebody can say in some cases, well, she looked older than she is. And I'll cede you that. But at some point you find out how old she is, and there's a number that should be a disqualifier, sir. Like, I don't care how, you know, how developed you think she is, how mature she looks. There should be an age where you say, okay, I can't. The rule that I've seen that's kind of like, that seems to be like acceptable general rule is half your age plus 7.
Oh, I've heard that.
In my case, that would make a young lady 29 years old, which seems just perfect.
Yeah.
Once you get around that age, however, I've met 50, 60-year-old women that were surprisingly immature, that lacked emotional intelligence, that lacked empathy and compassion, that lacked self and social awareness. I've met women in that age range, say 27, 28, 29, that were very, very mature, that experienced a lot of life and had a lot in the way of perspective, education, and culture. So I think inside of those windows, there's a lot of variance, but that's person to person. It's hard to set a hard age line once they're fully adults, and we're not talking about even playing anywhere near the age of children. Mm-hmm. That song, Age Ain't Nothing But a Number, was talking about a teenager. That's gross. As adults, sometimes that can apply, I mean. Like I said, I've met women 15 years younger than me that were very, very mature. The mother of my children, 7 years younger than me. You know, I've met people that were 11 years apart, 15 years apart, even 20 years apart. That sounds crazy when you're 20 and she's a newborn.
Yeah.
But when you're, you know, 48 and she's 28, maybe that's different. I've never experienced an age gap that far myself. But again, there's parts of adulthood and journeys beyond when you've fully developed cognitively and you've experienced enough life and you have autonomy and you're making decisions. You're not being manipulated. You're not being tricked in either direction. Right. Because there's men who are old enough for that younger woman to be the one who's in charge. You know, very, very famously, there's a coach right now. I won't say his name. He's like 45 years older than his girlfriend. Mm. I think that's crazy. I don't think there's any way to justify it. I've had conversations with people. And just like with this MAGA stuff, I was so shocked that I was the only one on my side of the argument that thought that this 70-year-old man and his 22-year-old girlfriend was strange. Ooh. And men in this conversation had daughters, which made it even more strange. I'm saying to them, you wouldn't date anybody younger than your daughter. I know you. But just like that other conversation, man, people, I don't know. So again, giving advice on romantic subjects, Rambus, I will never let you put me in that box.
Well, me personally, yeah.
Who am I? But I can give a lot of insight. So if you ever need some insight, reach out to your brother.
Okay. Yeah. No, you definitely provided some insight. I feel like we've kind of been there for each other a few times over the years, but.
No, that's the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know, man. I'm inclined to agree. This is it's tough to say something here that really answers the question fully. You're right. It's based on the individual and the individual or the couple's circumstances, I would imagine. That'd probably have the greatest influence over whether or not someone's a certain number of years older, too old or too young, I guess. I think that there's a lot of harm that comes with, from my understanding, because you remember during the Me Too movement, we were both kind of locked in. Like, I'll tell a brief story. So Q and I think that for our whole lives, we really thought of ourselves as being like really empathetic men. We would never take advantage of a woman or hurt anybody. It's just not our way. If anything, we'd be the sort of person, the first person in the room to stand up to protect a woman who was up against some injustice, unequal pay or some sort of physical danger or anything like that. Q famously has six sisters. So he got his, honestly. I have two little sisters that I've been responsible for since before I was a man. And I believe that that helped shape my life as well. And in the Me Too movement, we recognize how the patriarchy has really been damaging to women in ways that, you know, at least for me, I would have never known. There are blind spots that I just could not have known about, despite me trying all my life to make the world a better place for women and bring about some equality and some equity for my sisters that I share this time and on this planet with. You know, I had a lot more growing and learning to do, and I still do, and I know that that's a lifelong journey for me. But I think that, you know, in that moment, I realized that women are expected to be girls, and then they're expected to be, like, I think, like, sexy, and they're expected to be, you know, all these things before they're expected to be human. Like, it's like it doesn't register with people that these are human beings and, you know, they have periods, they go to bathrooms, that sort of stuff. And it caused a lot of shame for a lot of women. The women that have learned to overcome that are the women that, you know, are trying to change the narrative, and we've been doing our best to help there. And then, you know, you go on with that. You know, these women age naturally, you know, as we all do. Every single thing that is alive ages. Everything that's not alive ages too. And it is a phenomenon that is part and parcel to the physical universe in which we inhabit. And for some reason, it counts against women in our society. And it is entirely unfair. So in that moment, I learned that I need to not only bear this in mind when I hear it out in, you know, in conversations and just kind of living my life, that I need to help change that narrative, but I also need to do so like loudly and proudly, affirm that it, for me, it's important to date someone that is age appropriate, which is someone that is approximately my same age with my same life experience, if it's possible. Now, that doesn't exclude every single person, blah, blah, blah. I can meet somebody that's 50 years older than me, or 50, well, not 50 years younger than me, but you know what I'm saying? And, you know, if it's there, it's there, cool. But for the most part, be very intentional about celebrating the fact that the person that I'm with is age appropriate. Because not only does it help change the narrative, I think it lifts everybody's consciousness to where it should be. And then I guess the other thing that I can say about this is, at least in my mind, once upon a time, as I mentioned, I was the big brother to my two little sisters. I'll tell you the story about how we grew up along a little later on, but suffice it to say that I was the adult in their lives. And my youngest sister, she was a baby. I remember they brought her from the hospital, and I had a little sister, you know? And I had to help when she was a baby, and I used to change her diapers, and, you know, literally my sister. I was a little boy too, of course. But I remember thinking in my early years of adulthood that I could not possibly date somebody that is my sister's age, because that was a literal baby. I remember, you know what I mean? That just, it just kind of grossed me out a little bit. Like, it felt like kind of robbing the cradle, creepy old man sort of stuff. I might've been in my mid-20s when I was feeling this way. And then I had my own son, and now, you know, someone that is like kind of in their early 20s, that feels like super icky to me. You know what I mean? And I get that these can be adults with life experience and that sort of stuff, but to me personally, it feels like, you know, I left to my own device, I would never pursue somebody like that. It just is, it just would not be a sort of thing. In fact, I mean, and Q knows this, a lot of times when I interact with people that I can tell they're that young, I tend to take on a very fatherly, big brotherly role when interacting with them. So it's always, I say baby as a term of endearment, not like in a romantic way, but like a literal baby, like I'm here to care for you, baby. Like I call my nephew baby, I call my son baby, you know, that sort of thing. So in any event, I maybe that gives some insight, but that's the best that I got right now. It's a tough question now that we're in it, so yeah. Maybe we'll have a better number in the future. So, all right, let's talk about Tyler Reddick and this Michael Jordan interaction with his son. Okay, so this is from Complex Magazine. The author Mark Ebert, or sorry, Eli Bert, I think that's how I say it, or maybe Ellibert. Hope I get it right. All right, Tyler Reddick is speaking out after a celebratory moment involving Michael Jordan and Reddick's young son sparked controversy online following the Racers' Daytona 500 victory. Reddick addressed the situation during an appearance on the Stephen A. Smith Show on SiriusXM, saying he believes the criticism has been blown out of proportion and that he doesn't view the interaction as inappropriate. Quote, "From my perspective, I've gotten to know Michael and his family very well over the years. I've been here with 23XL, and I don't see what other people see when it comes to this," unquote, Reddick said. He goes on to say, "For me, it's a huge moment. This is the biggest moment of my career. It's a huge moment for my family and for his family." He added that his relationship with Jordan and those around him gave him a different perspective than people reacting online. He goes on to say, "And I just put that off to the side, and I think about the look on Yvette's face and the whole family and this whole group when they got to the victory lane too, and just how happy everyone was celebrating together," he said. He goes on to say, "So that's where I'm at with it." All right. So yesterday, you know, this was our Better Do Better segment. And I took the position that, you know, Michael Jordan might not have been doing anything overtly sexual. A lot of times in our society, we take stuff that is harmless and playful and whatever, and old-fashioned, to be fair, or culturally, maybe it's beyond the cultural sort of bubble that we've been exposed to in terms of various cultures that we've been able to interact with. And there are some cultural elements that lie beyond what our experience, our frame of reference, if you will. But indeed, these things are harmless. And I seeded that initially yesterday when I talked about Jordan's interaction with this little boy, that maybe there's some cultural elements, maybe this is just some old school stuff, you know, whatever. The reason I thought that Jordan better do better is because Jordan knows that the cameras are on him. Jordan knows that people tend to take stuff and run with it. And there's no getting away from it. Jordan knows that the biggest and most consistent element in the news cycle at present is the Epstein files. And all of the things that people's minds go to with the Epstein files. First, they connect celebrities and rich and powerful people with all of these depraved acts with these children on this man's island, right? So this is kind of top of mind for, let's say, most of the informed country. And Jordan is celebrating in this way with this little boy, or getting ice out of his clothes. Either way, there's cameras on and, you know, whatever. And I thought, you know, Jordan, you better do better, man. This is something that you need to be mindful of. This is something, you just can't do that. And even if it is harmless, and, you know, I'm assuming it was harmless, you know, you can't do that. You got to do better. Don't give these people something to use against you. Q pushed back yesterday, and I want you to jump in here. Q pushed back yesterday, and he said, well, you know, Jordan might not know any better. Jordan, his whole life has been in front of cameras, so he's never had to turn off anything in front of cameras. Jordan, his whole life has been, I don't know that you said this word, but maybe like enabled. Everyone always applauds what he says. And so I want you to kind of pick up there and, you know, talk us through your reflections here.
Well, I didn't say anything about applauding what he says because he doesn't say much. And enable wasn't a word that I used either. He's just been one of the most famous people on earth for 4 decades. Mm-hmm. So your life isn't normal. Michael Jordan doesn't have to perform, act, look, speak, or behave different in any room ever. He's always Michael Jordan. He's 6'6". He's excessively recognizable, excessively popular, excessively famous, and excessively wealthy. So I was just saying there's no version of him that says, okay, let me put on my PR version of myself. Like, no, I'm Michael Jordan. Like, I am a cultural icon. And, you know, I was just pointing out that there might not be a such thing as norms to someone who's had a very, very unnormal life for much longer than he had any resemblance of a normal one. Because even before he was super duper famous, he was a 6'6" astronomical athlete. So life started being different for him even before the whole world knew his name. So that's all that I was pointing out with regards to that, not really people enabling him or anything about things that he says, because he's kind of infamous for not saying much in times where the culture really, really wanted him to, and people, Black people, really wanted the most famous Black person on earth to speak up for us. And I think he very famously suggested that Republicans buy sneakers too, which takes us back to our conversation about capitalism and how it seems to be the, pardon the pun, Trump card for everything and everyone. Regards to this story, man, I don't mind that the family doesn't think anything was wrong. I don't mind that some people saw it and were caught off guard by it, because again, culturally, generationally, and without context and any relation to that family and what his relationship is with them and their child, there's a way to draw one of any dozen conclusions. My only problem with the response to this is people who are acting like it's obvious he wasn't doing anything wrong. It's like, okay, these are, now you're just, it's, I hate that everything comes back to this, but it's like, I know who you voted for when that's your response. When your response is, well, there was obvious some ice and he was just getting the ice off the kids' shorts. If your position is that that was obvious, I know who you voted for. I know how you feel about everything that's happening on earth right now. Sad, but true. And forgive me if people feel judged by that, but it's kind of true, right? All of us could have, again, one of many positions on what we saw as it being cute and playful because it's a baby and maybe he loves that family and that baby's like one of his grandkids. And that would not be strange to see a man doing that to his grandbaby. We pinch the cheeks and butts and legs of our own kids all the time. So again, I'm not polarized on it. Some people thought it was inappropriate. The family saying that it was fine, I'm good either way.
Well, there it is. Got more to add to the story. So with that in mind, that's going to do it for us here at the QR Code. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. If you have some thoughts you'd like to share, do us a favor. Use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. And while you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. I want to give a quick shout out to Ace Estwick for sharing the clip of James Baldwin that we used in today's episode. If you want to check us out on social media, you can do so at Civic Cipher. That is CIVICCIPHER. Hopefully, you'll find us on YouTube and subscribe to us there as well. You can find me on all social media at Ramses Jock, Q-Ward, at Civic Cipher. And do us a favor, join us next time as we share our news with our voice from our perspective right here on the QR Code. Peace.